everyone, and welcome to a very special Turn Out of Punk Splits. Returning to the show, Tony from Municipal Waste. Tony, welcome back to the show.
Welcome back. I mean, I feel great. It feels great to be back. Welcome for having me.
Well, it's an honor to have you back here. And what has brought us together today is our connection, our label, our mutual close friend, the great Scotty Carotti from Tank Crimes Records. Woo! Scotty, welcome to the
What's
show.
What's up? I can't believe I'm on a podcast with the singers of my two favorite bands from 2005. This is just unbelievable.
I love how much louder you are than it's just like we're on the bus.
Should I
louder than everybody?
Should I wrap a couple pieces of tape around my microphone?
No,
scream.
I'll make sure we all balance out in the mix. I can guarantee that because yeah. But I feel like, Scotty, it's amazing because between Tony and our respective bands, I think we represent two sides of the Tank Crimes label experience for you. Tony being the fun, awesome side, and Fucked Up being me being the, is this worth it? Why is there so many headaches involved in running a label side?
Well, Fucked Up doesn't really give me headaches, except when we're touring together. Like the records all sell, so that's good.
I was gonna say the weed side and the beer side.
Yeah,
know, like, oh, that's true. Well, you guys, I think I don't want to blow up your spot. You're not necessarily in a legal state, so, there is some cannabis consuming in your band without blowing up anyone's spots. I believe, right, Tony?
Tony lives in Florida. Shit's legal down there.
Is it legal in Florida?
Virginia's legal now too.
Oh my gosh! Well, yeah, in that case. Yeah. In that
we
case,
can finally America. Talk about smoking weed in public now.
Yes.
Check it out. Here's my weed card, dude. Look
at that. Tony is legal. Scotty is legal. I am legal. Oh, my. I left my bong at the studio, though, so I unfortunately can't partake right now, but partaking in spirit.
Yeah. You know, when we met Damien, I never thought that you would one day be like, oh, sorry, I left my bong at the studio.
Yeah. That's great.
I feel like I had sellout written all over me the whole time. I think the signs were there. It's like, you know, you're not going to know I'm a pothead, but the signs will be there kind of thing. Like,
your other interest didn't change when you became a pothead. You just are a pothead with the same interests as when you were a straight edge dude.
I feel like pothead goes with anything. You know, it's like
it really does.
Yeah. It's like, except for maybe being straight edge. They really don't.
Dude,
like
I want to invent alcohol that's like pot, where you can like get drunk for an hour and then like watch a movie and not be wasted. You know, like.
Oh, yeah.
That's the problem with alcohol. It doesn't just like wear off and you go about your day like weed does.
Yeah. That's true.
It keeps ramping up, or you got to go to bed.
They have Lagunitas weed beer now in California.
Oh yeah, that shit felt cool.
They tried to launch that up here, and it didn't really take because I think it was pretty low dose, and I don't know. I just feel like it's a different kind of consumer market. Have you tried those new like fast uptake edibles that have hit the market? I think it might be a beverage too.
I'm still smoking the weed I grew 2 summers ago because I grew too much, so I didn't even grow weed last year.
Oh my, yo, Scotty, do you remember when Lacus brought that weed pizza to the show in Oakland? And I ate four slices of it.
Because you were just hungry. You didn't know it was weed pizza. You thought it was regular pizza.
And I went out full on like for it. And
that guy, that guy roasted a weed turkey in the pit at Burnt Ramen on a mini charcoal barbecue.
Legend.
I would. That's the thing. Those are the times I wish I was there for. I feel like I came late to the party. No one roasts weed turkeys anymore.
But, yeah, no one does that anymore.
Nope. No, but they've got these new edibles that are fast uptake edibles that take effect, I think it's like 15, 20 minutes.
Oh, I like that because that's one of the reasons I don't like edibles because I end up smoking weed waiting for it to kick in. And then I'm just like, well, why'd I don't know.
Yeah, I find edibles are such a weird thing too, because like even if you have a lot of experience with them, you never know how it's going to affect you, like how much is going to hit you and when it's going to hit you.
I don't trust them.
Yeah.
No, I don't trust
Yeah,
them.
That's what else. I've been smoking weed long enough. I know I feel totally in control of weed. But not when you eat it.
Yeah, I've got like a super, like I'm on 500 milligrams right now.
500?
Yeah.
We got
sick.
Tony, that last time we played, Municipal Waste played the Biker Club in Sacramento. The second time, now there's a weed dispensary at the end of the block. And they brought us bags and bags of like free shit. And I was fucking hammered that night when we stayed at Mikey fucking Hood's house. And I ate like a whole tray of gummies because I couldn't fall asleep. And I woke up so high the next day. I was so miserable in the fucking bus.
That was one of the most miserable mornings I've seen our band in a long time. Everybody was really hungover. Like y'all were like laying in the yard.
We were laying in the yard waiting to get picked up. It was bad. It was a rough night. That night did not feel like it was going to be on like the 2022 calendar. That was like a night out of 2007, and we relived it as adults.
Do you remember the night you did dabs in Vancouver on the fucked up tour?
I love doing dabs in Vancouver, and I really, my whole dab experience is all with you, Damien, and actually my brother-in-law dabs. So when we go to like have family dinners, we'll go dab in his garage. But what was that thing called? What was that bong called?
The Sublimator.
Oh, the Sublimator. That thing gets you fucked up.
That sounds like a waste song title.
Yeah, Sublimator. Yes,
definitely.
That thing is not for amateurs at all. No.
That was the most fucked up I think I've seen any and every member of fucked up that night. And then Tony.
And then I dine and dashed, but then I was with Canadians. So Tony, if you dine and dash with Canadians, the Canadians just pay your tab and then you feel guilty.
And they go, sorry.
I guess dash has a different exchange rate in Canada because when Scotty says he was dashing, he was moving in slow motion. And the waitress is like, what the hell is he doing? And we go, don't worry, we'll take care of his bill.
He's in the spirit world right now.
It was very much a slow moving train.
Dine and crawl out of it while all the staff watches you and ask the rest of your party what you're doing.
Yeah.
Shit, that's good.
And then pay back the band fund the next day, the $12.
Hipster hot dogs aren't cheap.
Damien, are you do you live near London?
I want to come to the London show. I can't, like,
is
we
that
are
near you?
It's close. It's about 3 hours, 2.5 hours.
Oh, it's that far?
Oh, damn. Oh,
I thought it was like 1 hour. But then I recently just noticed other bands' tour dates that play London and Toronto. So I was like, fuck, that's more than an hour.
Yeah,
we only booked that show there because Brutal Knights wrote a song about that town.
Really?
Yeah. Not really, but that's the only thing I know about that town is Brutal Knights.
But yeah, London, Ontario is a Brutal Knights kind of town. There's a great scene there. There's been some like unbelievable kind of clubs there over the years. But that's funny. That's why you booked it instead of Toronto. I was like, why are they going to London?
We didn't really. That's not really why. Honestly, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, so you might have to edit this. But the place, I'm not going to say any specifics, but the place in Toronto wanted to take a ridiculous merch cut, and they were very rude to us in the past regarding that. So we moved the show elsewhere. And that is why that show is not in Toronto, unfortunately. Because we were trying to stick to our guns as far as
that's topical, though. That's topical, though. Merch cuts.
I know.
The average music fan knows all about merch cuts now. So they people get behind you when you say, sorry, we're not going to your town. Merch cuts.
Yeah, I just didn't want to. I should have said anything, but like, I just didn't want to just bring crap up. But I know a lot of people were bummed we weren't actually playing Toronto proper. But yeah, it sucks, man. Like that place in particular is just a fucking merch cut nightmare. So we're just like, yeah, let's just not do it. We'll just go somewhere else we haven't played that much and have fun.
I have two. I have two kids street teaming for us. Two young Londonites, some Ontario boys,
putting up posters
out there for us. So yeah,
this street team idea. I have a mouthful of ice. I'm sorry. I'm the worst right now. But I think the street team idea is great, Scotty.
So this is something that I think I must have told one of you guys this over the years, but I always forget about it. But my very first fucking thing I ever did in like the music industry, besides just be a fan, was I street teamed for Skunk Records, Sublime's record label. Are you fucking ready for that? That is true.
Oh, shit.
That is true shit. I did that in San Francisco, and they were fucking tight, dude. They, like, bought me. They, like, got me on the guest list to see Ween at the Warfield. Like, they would, like, send me to cool places to street team. They didn't want me just, like, putting flyers up at the head shop or whatever.
So, but, would they put you on the guest list of the show that you were?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And whoa. I fucked it up because they were actually, like, pretty good at, like, keeping tabs on their street team. And like, I was like doing good. I was doing good for like a couple months. And then I just like blew it off. I mean, I was like 19 years old, just moved to San Francisco. Like after a couple free Ween shows, I'm like, what am I doing? Plus my musical tastes were changing also. And I was like putting up like slightly stupid and filibuster posters, you know, because I loved Sublime. So I just kind of grew out of it, but that was my, the other record label I volunteered for was Alternative Tentacles, and volunteering for Skunk was cooler. Alternative Tentacles had me like stuffing, they had me like folding envelopes or something. It was like total bullshit. And I just left.
You can go sit in here.
The coolest thing about,
is that your Jello?
It's my Jello.
That's a good Jello. The one thing that's awesome is Alternative Tentacles has one gold record on the wall at their offices, and it's Iceberg by Ice-T because Jello does the spoken word intro on it, and that's the gold record hanging there. So that's the coolest thing about those offices.
You'd think by now one of those other records had gone gold.
I think that just last year, a Dead Kennedys record went gold.
Yeah.
So, but like Jello wasn't really hyping it. I saw it through like East Bay Ray or somebody. And it happened after DH Peligro died. Cause I was like, oh, I'm getting like the actual Dead Kennedys band stuff, like in my feed twice in 1 year. And I follow like the Jello side, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a major, I remember that moment kind of happening, that trial too. I'm trying to think where I was reading coverage of it, but like Dexter
that was like
Hall
right when I was getting into touring. That was like right when I was getting into touring, early 2000s. Because I remember someone from Alternative Tentacles on an early Vote Sec tour like asked us to like bring, and we did, but I don't think we ever did anything with it. We had like a binder where you were supposed to like sign your support for Jello or whatever. And at the time, I didn't really have any real understanding of what was even happening at all.
It's wow. It's bizarre too, because like you think about back at that time, they're like, how many of these bands got like really popular and there was like a real stake to it. And I'm really glad that I live in an era where that's not a concern for us. There's never enough money that we're going to fight each other for it and fucked up.
I want my 12 Spotify cents.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in the era where it's like, hey, you want to incur the debt? Who's going to incur the debt for this?
Yeah, I like that.
Well, that's
incur the debt.
As Tank Crimes grew, I now have like different options for like the deals with the bands, but everybody just still picks the original fucking offer from 2003, which is 20% of the records. Because even like for your guys' bands, you're like, oh, that's a way better fucking pay than even like a 50-50 profit split deal. Like just take the records and sell them for cash and you're doing better, you know?
If you're a touring band, for sure, it's probably the quickest way to see money, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it comes fast too, you know? if you're out there playing shows.
Yeah, and I think even now, because there's like merch table and not to point them. There's like a few other services that do this kind of thing, but you can actually have your merch sold at the end of tour through some sort of like distribution deal as a band, which I think takes a lot of the risk out of like getting a lot of product. Like after, I remember after it's like, oh shit, what are we gonna do with these shirts? Like that, I think we still had shirts from early Fucked Up tours sitting in our practice space that we were finally able to just be like, oh, fine, we can shift these. It's not enough to bring on tour, you know, like one or two shirts and like have like a $5 box.
I still, nothing more embarrassing to me than to see a band's tweet, tour leftovers are up. I'm like, oh, you poor bastards. Though I've been in, though I know every tour has leftovers at the end, but I'm always like, you're admitting that shit? Leftovers? Like, gross, there's something wrong with them or something. Like, what? They better be on a deep fucking discount if they're left over from tour. Fucking gross.
That's why you just got to better brand it like tour reserves. We held back some for you fans at home.
Yeah, no, this is how you market your tour leftovers. There was so much demand for these shirts on the tour, and we were running out of them so fast, we pressed up just one more last version for the true fans.
Of triple XL.
But we only have small and triple XL. We that's all we're doing. It's for the super fans.
Yeah, that is definitely the ones that are all... No, actually, Fucked Up, because of my size... I always have to deal with someone at the show being like, how come you guys don't carry anything above an XL? And I'm like, because my band are a bunch of fucking assholes and don't support people like you and me. That's what it really comes down to.
That's it. Like, no one wants
Scotty, I found literally like 2 days ago, I found the merch numbers, the merch sheets that are handwritten by you from the entire 9-week Guar tour. So I have everything that we sold.
Sick. You got
that.
Like the book, like the, was it like in, a note, is it like a notebook
in your handwriting, and then you can tell you get bored and like start talking like
punk museum dreads. Punk museum
person with dreads three.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm like making other tallies for how many fucking Punishers came by.
Yeah, I gotta send you guys a photo of it. It's like, oh shit, man, we sold 12 shirts. Hell yeah.
Yeah, I actually still have, it's actually one of my like most cherished memorabilias. Is I still have the piece of cardboard, like t-shirts $10, CDs $10, like that. And it's got fucking Guar Dread drippings all over it from kids leaning over the merch fucking after they're totally soaked.
I had to explain to a member of Guar what Guar Dreads were. So you're going to have to tell Damien what
is Guar Dread is.
We just named just the blood and shit and cum that drips off of you. We just named it Guar Dreads because, like, people with long hair, their hair gets all like clumped up and stuff, and then they're like dripping on the merch table and like hugging you and dripping. So most of the drips come off of long hair, men and women, and it was so we just started calling them Guar Dreads, and it's then we were referring to all the blood anywhere. If there's a puddle of blood on the floor, watch out, there's Guar Dreads in the hallway. You know, oh, I got some Guar Dreads in the trailer.
It's still, you know, 20 years later, we still say it all the time.
We still say Guar Dreads all the time.
Yeah. They got to be like one of the hardest working bands in the world.
Yeah, I think so. It's continue to be too.
Yeah.
Man, I was fucking watched the fucking video of Brocky on Joan Rivers recently. And
that's so
God,
good.
He was so smart and so fast and so fucking funny, man. And it's like, he's going head, like Joan Rivers, you know, had her talk show in the 90s, but she's a legit fucking comedian too, you know, and like a badass. And she's quick and smart too. And they were like going like head to head and he's just fucking cracking her up. It's a great video
Bishop
to watch.
Too.
Yeah,
Mike
and
Bishop
Mike Bishop's
too.
With him as Beefcake in that one, who's the leader of the band now. So it's a really cool clip. And I think now, like, I mean, if somebody asked me of like a cool Guar clip to look up on YouTube, it's that Joan Rivers. It's so fucking good. He's so funny.
They're a band that I think should get a Vegas residency. Like if there's one band that I could be like, okay.
Oh, that'd be a good idea for him.
Oh, it'd be amazing. Go to like
Dude,
a restaurant.
I'll see Guar in the Sphere.
Dude, I almost I almost had internet beef with Brocky one time. Because we're like old friends, and we had some dumb beef about something and almost went to the internet. And thank God that got squashed before that happened.
Oh, he would have roasted you, dude. You don't want to go toe-to-toe with Brocky.
No
also,
way, dude.
He's in character, so he can say meaner stuff than a human would say.
He's also like in America's Hardcore, I think it is, where he talks like he's like, I hated the DC Hardcore dudes. I hated all those Discord guys. He like had like no issue with calling people out.
Yeah. He didn't give a fuck.
Yeah. Well, definitely love like him. That Death Piggy stuff's fucking amazing too. It's like a whole other act for his career.
We were on the Guar tour. We were in Buffalo, New York, over close near you, Damien, but we were in Buffalo, New York, and Rancid was playing up the street. So we went, Ryan and I went, actually, like, it was, I don't even know who we got to do merch. Like, Ryan, like, big brothered me and got somebody in the band to, like, watch merch or something so we could go see Rancid, because everybody knew I was the one who cared the most about Rancid at the time. And we go over there, and we don't really know how we're getting into the show or anything. And we walked up to the back door of the venue, and we just flashed our laminates from the Guar tour. And the guy was like, whoa, out of the way, guys. And like ushered us right in. And it was the back, and it was like the door right behind the stage. So we like walk up super casually, just kind of like, let's see if this works. We flash our laminates for the show down the street. The guy rushes us in, and we're just on the stage. And Rancid's playing. We're just on the fucking stage. And we kind of like,
I did that at a Paramore show one time.
Yeah, and then they do an Op Ivy cover, and Ryan Waste goes to sing backups, and he gets full Nelsoned right out of there by fucking Rancid security. But they let us stay. He just pulled them off like the band's part, like stage real estate, and put us back like stage left. And then Tim Armstrong came and said what's up to us like after the show. Like right after, like when he was walking off the stage and was like, oh, sorry, if we would have known you guys wanted to do backups, you know, just we told these guys no one on stage. So that's why he like bum rushed you or whatever. And we're like, oh, no, it's cool. You know, we're on tour with Guar. And like Tim Armstrong's face lit up. He was like, oh, no shit, Guar. Like, you know, Operation Ivy played with Guar at Gilman Street. Tell him we said what's up. You know, so cool that we're both still playing all these years later or whatever.
I totally forget they did a Gilman show.
Yeah, I have. Well, I mean, I don't have the flyer, but I have a printout of the flyer.
That's an insane show.
That, you know, that was the first thing I did with the internet. When the internet first came out, I used to go to the library in Brighton, Michigan, and look up, I don't even remember what the search engine was back then, but I would look up show flyers from California and print them out on the library computer and then just to like hang in my room. But that's my very first memories of the internet. Was doing that.
Yeah. I run it and print it out on Puss Zone. You could get Puss Head's list of the best records from the 90s. So I printed out that. And then I went to Revelation Records and printed out the complete discography. Like, just so I could have them in like a binder. And I still have these.
Did Puss Zone have the whole Skunk Records catalog?
Yes, that was number one on his list of the best records from the 90s. Or best, it was already best records from the 80s. So no, they didn't make the list. Do you ever see them, Scotty? The Mighty Sublime.
Which band?
Sublime.
No, I never got to see Sublime.
I think I saw them once, but now I wonder if it's a false memory.
Yeah, they did play Detroit, I think St. Andrews Hall, like when I was a fan, and like I just like couldn't get the night off work. And it was like a huge deal for us to go to Detroit. So it like took a lot of planning and money and just everything. So I had missed it. And it wasn't too much later that I like regretted not making more of an effort, not even because he died, but because I realized I was like a super fan. But I think at the time I was still like realizing how important live music was to me. I was like on the cusp of realizing that, like, if I love a band, I want to see them live from the more casual, which I was never a casual music fan, but like, from CDs being okay. Because not growing up in a city, there just wasn't many options for shows.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ska too happening in like Michigan at that point, right?
Oh yeah, there was. Well, like Mustard Plug's still around. Jack Kevorkian and the Suicide Machines. I mean, that was kind of, we've talked about this before, but that was kind of my gateway into like DIY punk and hardcore was through punk ska. That kind of like trained my ear to go down. And it was, I always say, once I got to Against All Authority were aggressive enough, they were basically a punk band. And then I could just slide right over and it's like, oh, I like punk and ska.
Yeah, Falling Sickness too, I kind of lump into that category, like a super aggressive band.
Sublime also, I wish I would have seen them live because they were so bold. Like they would like headline Los Angeles in 1995 and open with a Bad Religion cover, like the biggest band in town. They'd just show up in their town and open and cover one of their songs for the first song of their set. No one does that shit anymore. That's like some old school, like Jimi Hendrix era shit. Just like covering a contemporary in their own town.
What's the band that does like Come Come My Lady, Sugar Five Baby,
Crazy Town, Crazy Town?
They cover Refused.
Crazy Tony Town knows that.
They cover Refused.
I just honked my car horn like it was, you know, I was on a game show.
He won. And ding, ding, ding.
They did a cover of New Noise. So, and they're kind of like the Sublime of their era.
What band?
Crazy Town. Sublime of the era.
bands don't cover contemporaries anymore, really. And I was in a really funny situation in Pittsburgh at the Mr. Roboto Project. And Born Dead was playing, and I don't remember if Caustic Christ was playing or if Behind Enemy Lines was there, but all of Os Rotten was in the crowd. And Born Dead goes into an Os Rotten cover, and the room like fucking froze. And every Pittsburgh kid is like looking at a member of Os Rotten for like approval to dance. And then they didn't really get it. Like everyone in Os Rotten was actually like weirded out and didn't like really like give an enthusiastic response to it.
I feel like that band would have been like the least fun dudes on the planet, but they're actually like a couple of like some of my favorite human beings.
Oh yeah, and like partying like, with Os Rotten, how fun it is. You'd never think that the guys from that band.
They're like that. I mean, when I listened to them as a kid, I was like, this is the
these
most
guys are serious.
Band
yeah, these
in
guys
the
are
world.
Fucking serious. Yeah.
You meet like Corey and Eric, and they're like the coolest, fucking funnest dudes. Like, I don't know.
Love well, I was guys. Saying how I slowly went into like heavier and heavier music. When I first got my first Os Rotten record, that was like is punk. That was the punkest thing in my record collection, almost. And I remember like beginning to like sprinkle it into my mixtapes, and just like, oh shit, my mixtapes are like getting punker than the Misfits, getting punker than ska. I'm sprinkling in some Os Rotten tracks here, you know. And then like right then, I think after Os Rotten, then I discovered Havoc Records, and then I was just then I knew about Crust like full on, and like started collecting Crust records.
I had a mixtape. It was Os Rotten, Drop Dead, and Dystopia.
Oh, sick!
Yeah, and Anti Schism. Do you remember Anti Schism?
Yes,
like, I love Anti Schism. Yeah,
yeah.
Yo, you know what's crazy is Sarah Burns, who's on the TV show How to Get Away with Murder. And was also in Barry. When she was on the podcast, she brought up Anti Schism as one of her favorite bands.
What?
Yeah, the only she has on her iPod currently or something.
They were so good. Like if they if they had an active label reissuing their stuff, I think they could really be popping off right now. Like the way that like Nausea and Dystopia are so popular right now. Anti Schism is one of those bands. Like if they had like a bold reissue, you know.
If only we knew someone that could do that.
Well, I always wonder, like, Ken Prank has so many classic records that he's not, that are, you know, for whatever reasons. Like, I'm not putting him on blast, but I mean, he put out, you know, at least their discography. That's what I have, I have, like, the every track CD on Prank.
Did he do the Initial State record?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a Prank one.
That's a fucking, man, that's a banger.
Well, yeah. We used to stay with Sivak. Used to do all our shows in Texas. Those were big. Is cocaine legal yet? I could talk about that on this podcast if we want to talk about playing Austin, Texas with crust bands.
That was like the entry point for cocaine's reemergence in hardcore, I think.
Yeah, it all came back in Texas. Texas brought it back. Yeah, they fucked us. They made cocaine crust.
Yeah. It was just like so different, the party at a hardcore show in Texas versus the party at a hardcore show in Toronto at the time.
Oh, well, we used to joke that you should take a day off after Austin because no one's going to bed till that Texas sun comes up anyways. So if you have a far drive the next day, like back when we would stay the full night and have breakfast at the town we played the night before moving on, like that Austin will fuck you up. You're always late. Like whoever's next after Austin, like Oklahoma City and Houston, like hate Austin because the bands always miss sound check. Like, you know, like everyone's always late. Like the locals got to start before you get there and shit, that kind of late.
Yeah. It's one of those places that you hit on tour, especially in that part of the U.S. where you're just like, you know, the party's going to be so good that night, but you know, there's not really a party before, not really a party after.
Yeah.
Well, Austin always felt like super professional, kind of like the bit just because you'd play like emos or something that you like, that was like covered on the internet or Pitchfork or like South by Southwest and stuff. So like coming through and playing emos as like a DIY band always felt like, oh shit, like we're playing this club. You know,
I always loved it because of Fuck Emos, the band.
Oh, the Fuck Emos.
Yeah, the Fuck Emos. Which I was like, I thought there was such a great band. And, you know, I'm like, oh my God, I'm playing at the club they beefed with. I think they had squashed it by then and played there, though. But what Selfless put out the original Anti-Schism stuff, right?
That sounds right.
Yes. Yeah. Because I have an Initial State test press. And that it was Selfless. It was Selfless. But I don't know who reissued it or if it was ever reissued.
I think Prank reissued the Initial
No,
State.
Yeah, I have. I don't know what he did LP wise. It was Prank. But I have the CD. I have like the discography CD on Prank.
Yeah. I love those. That Selfless Records has got to be like, I love those labels where you look at them, you're like, that catalog, because it's not one genre. It's like all over the map. And it's like all these. Like,
Screech and Weasel. The Queers were on that.
Didn't Iron Reagan? Didn't Iron Reagan do a record?
Iron Reagan. It was Clear.
He moved it to Clearview.
Yeah.
And there was a time when it was like both, and then, but yeah, I mean, just like for me, like look, when I discovered that catalog of records on one label, that like, you know, sometimes. When you get into deeper and deeper punk, you know, you have to kind of like shed your favorite bands as a teenager, kind of to like, you feel like you need to fit in and listen to cooler and more underground stuff. And then it was like, when I found out that like Selfless was doing Screeching Weasels and Queers right next to Spaz and Drop Dead and Anti-Schism and stuff, it was like, oh, okay. Like this makes sense to other people than besides just me.
That was the Screeching Weasel Born Against split too, right? That's insane.
He did several Screeching Weasel records. He did the first Spaz album.
Yeah.
First Spaz album, Dwarf Jester Rising, which is now on Tank Crimes, was on Selfless. Man. Yeah.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Bovine's like that.
Bovine's fucking great, dude. I love Bovine.
It's crazy. Like first Boris, Turbo Negro and like Spaz and Brutal Truth split and
Corrupted, maybe it was Corrupted on there.
Yeah, maybe there's like Corrupted split in there too.
I get that and Reservoir mixed up sometimes.
Reservoir definitely. There's that Jesuit split with Corrupted. Maybe is it Corrupted Jesuit split? No, it's Newthrush. Corrupted split.
I feel like all those bands are like Kevin Bacon together, you know?
Yes.
In my brain, at least.
Yeah. It's funny, Jason Green, who sang in Orchid and now he has like a bunch of other projects now. He was on the podcast recently and referred to himself as the Kevin Bacon of indie sleaze.
Wow.
I can get to him in one step. Kent McClard, Orchid guy. Boom, I'm there. Boom, I just Kevin Bacon'd him in one step.
Yeah. Who's the Kevin Bacon of hardcore?
Oh, I mean, Dave Witte.
Dave Witte. Yeah. He's if you're playing,
I mean, Damien, you connect in a different way, Damien, you connect so many people because of your podcast, because you connect different generations of punk, you know?
Yeah, but I think the rule for me is you have to have toured with or put out a record with.
Got it. That's what I was saying. Like your story is an extension of that because you've become like a journalist or a host is actually what I'd refer to you more as. But I force myself into
other people's stories.
But yeah, you have to have shared a record or a backseat of a van with someone
or been in a movie with them, I guess, too, for some of the links, or made a TV show with them.
That was a big difference, Damien, touring with you. When you were straight edge, you would sit shotgun so you could, whoever was driving, you could point to the record store we needed to go to or the restaurant you wanted to try. And then now when we tour, it's me and you in the back seat, like doing fucking vaping and fucking. Yes.
Yeah, I moved
recording podcasts.
Yeah, like, I moved my position in the band and no longer have to the detriment of my back. Cause like the only place you get a captain's chair is up front. Everywhere else you get those like bench seats that cut.
Yeah, you're just sliding in. And
yeah, like I really need to get back to the front seat, but now I gave it up to Sandy and I don't think she's giving it.
My back is rough right now. I'm having a bad time. Getting old.
Have you tried that hook?
Well, what do you mean? Hey, both you guys got big tours coming up.
I know.
Man, I hope you're in performance shape.
Have I tried?
You might need a bacchiotomy.
Hold on, Damien's gonna give me some performance enhancing drugs. Yeah.
Have you tried that thing that's like a hook and it's got all these little nubs on it? I forget what it's called. It's made out of plastic normally. And you can kind of like wedge it into the sore spot on your back and just like
ramp. I've seen those. My shit's like right in the center of my back. It's crazy.
No, that's why it's good. Trust me. It definitely, I would sit in the van and just do it. And people in the band would look around and be like, what the hell are you doing? Cause you get this like amazing, like orgasm face as you're just finally getting this spot in your back and just fucking working it.
You're like, what are you doing? I'm warming up.
Just giving myself a little bit of joy. Just a moment of joy, please. Let me have this.
That reminds me, another fun thing that happens in the fucked up van is that Jonah works out in the van. Jonah does micro workouts in his seat. And I was like doing it with him. Yeah, he'll do like, all right, clench your butthole for 15 seconds and then breathe. So like do that. But then I remember we were doing this exercise, which was actually a really funny thing to do in the van. You have to blow on a piece of paper and hold it on the roof of the van by blowing on it. It's like a crazy exercise, but that's one of like the Jonah in the van, like staying in tip top condition exercises. Clench your butthole and blow a set list on the roof.
That explains why when Jonah farts in the middle of the night, because we shared a room on the last run, it's like almost like someone blowing a perfect C note on a trumpet. Like it's like,
oh yeah, you do. He's doing those fucking butthole kegels. He's got a good tone out of that. He's got
amazing tone. If you need a horn player for your ska band, Scotty, he's got it covered. How come there hasn't been a Skank Crimes release yet?
Oh God. You know I tried.
Yes.
I vowed to walk away and never talk about it.
I was
almost there. And if it worked out, my very next move was hitting up Against All Authority because their first album, Destroys What Destroy You, is still out of print. Even
fucking
though
love that
together.
Record.
That's the best fucking record, and it's Florida, still out of man. Print. I did some research because that was on like the trumpet player's record distributed by No Idea. And he left the band after that. And I have no idea how it happened, but they've never got that album back. It's not on streaming. It's not in print. And now it's become like an expensive Discogs record. And they're back playing shows. And whatever it is, however they fucked up, they gave the damn trumpet players all the rights to their first fucking album, and he's holding on to it.
See, they get all the chicks, and then they
That's the only reason we never got a horn section.
Because it would just, because you didn't want to put up with ska stuff, or you just, it was the only guy available was the trumpet player from Against All Authority.
Because they had just a bad steal rep. Your rights to your records. And,
yeah, they'll take all the rights. Against All Authority was cool because they were punk. I mean, they were doing splits with The Pissed and, oh, well, fuck, Anti-Flag. But still, it was like different at the time that they weren't doing splits with other ska bands. They were doing splits with punk bands.
Yeah, when they did the split with The Pissed, that's how I first heard The Pissed. If I'm going to be honest, it was like was through them.
All right, fuck it. I had a wet dream sleeping on the floor of Al from The Pissed house. Because it was when you couldn't jerk off all the time when I was on tour with Votsek. It was all women. I was more polite. It was like, people ask me what it's like being in a band with all women, different than band with all men. I go, there's less farting and less jerking off. Everything else is exactly the same.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Will you say, though, that Fucked Up is the most sexless band you've ever been on tour with?
Well, Fucked Up, I always, like, so I don't think I'm, like, super smart or super dumb. Like, I think I'm smart in my interests and maybe ambivalent about other things. But I'm not that, I mean, I didn't go to college. So, like, I'm not, like, higher educated or whatever. But I never feel dumb in a group of people, ever. But when I'm in the van with Fucked Up, I feel like least educated person in there because you guys all like read books and shit all the time. Like, seriously, like, you're on tour with Fucked Up, everyone has like 3 books for the 3-week tour, and I'm like, okay, shit, people will be like, what are you reading? And I'm like, Maximum Rock and Roll, I don't know.
I remember like Annihilation Time, if you like open their van door. Well, I forget what the van was called. I remember what it was called.
The Connection.
Is that the name of the fucking van?
Well, they bought
Yeah.
It was called the Country Connection. So all they had to do is scrape a couple letters off the back of that thing. Because it was a legit, like, community bus.
They rode around the country, and I think they got into Canada, too, and the police opened the doors. And a bunch of porn mags like fell out. Oh, they had like porno on the walls. On the like they taped porn to the walls, and like, of course, like you know, a blast sticker, and then like,
yeah, yeah, that's it. Decorated.
So I would imagine that sounds like the opposite of what Fucked Up band was like.
Oh God, yeah. Yeah, it is like
no, Fucked Up Van is like, I could sneak a porno into the van as a gag on everyone, so everyone could be like aghast that it's there.
Yeah, definitely. It would definitely be so weird. Like, what the fuck is this doing here?
I think one time I bought like a bikini chick air freshener or something at a gas station, and it like lasted like 1 mile down the road.
Yeah, we don't play that.
Van.
We don't play that at all.
No,
my friend Daniel Makabe, who's this wrestler, came on tour with us, and he was riding with the Hallucination, and he's like, "Can we switch vans?" And like, can I ride with Fucked Up? And I'm like, "Yeah, for sure." And it was awesome for me because I got along with the Hallucination way better. And then he was like, "Your band, no one talks at all." Yeah, that's not a very fun place to be.
Everyone's reading. Like real books, not just their phone.
Yeah.
Very how, educated bunch.
That's how bored everyone is. We gotta fucking read. Like
that's pretty awesome.
I don't know.
Yeah,
you guys...
like so honestly, like, yeah, I was like saying that as a joke or whatever. And I do feel like the I mean, I am literally the least educated person when I'm in the van with you guys, but that's still like fun for me. Like it matters to me to have friends that have smarter interests too. It makes me feel smarter, you know.
There's no way though. Like I watch the Waste tour videos and I'm like, Municipal Waste is way more fun to tour in than Fucked Up.
Yeah, it is.
There's no way it's not. There's no way.
It is. That's why I spend why I spend 1 week every 2 years with Fucked Up and like 4 months a year with Municipal Waste.
Yes. Get that. I completely understand. I very much I would too if I had the ability to. It is a I think it's like one of those things where you hear about bands that are fun and people stick around because it's fun, and there's some bands where people just stick around because I guess they're trapped, and I think we fall in that latter category more than the former.
Well, no, because I truly love everyone in your band. Everyone's just such a unique individual and so much different than other bands, and I think that I always just say it's because you're Canadian, but it's more than that. You know, you guys are, every band's a unique group of people, but Fucked Up's like was the most unpredictable group of people to meet when I just wrote your record label, Gord Deranged, and said, can I get a contact for Fucked Up? I want to invite them to play San Francisco.
You believed in both our bands, though, super early on.
I absolutely did.
That's true.
And I still do. Yeah, I absolutely did, and I still do. And, I mean, the thing is that Fucked Up and Municipal Waste both went in their own directions, but are the two lasting bands out of the scene that spawned Tank Crimes. That's really an overlooked, in 2024, there's no like music era more overlooked than the early 2000 underground 80s hardcore throwback crossover basement scene. Like it's just not covered.
Do you think that's like because of like the numbers? You don't, nobody ever goes, oh man, the Zeros were sick.
I say the ooh-oohs sometimes, and I just said that in front of my wife like last night, and she'd never heard me say it. And I was like, come on, I always say the ooh-oohs. And she's like, you've never said the ooh-oohs for the 2000s.
Don't they call it the aughts?
They call it the aughts.
Aughts.
They call it the aughts, which is weird. I mean, that's what they called like the that's what they called the 1900s. So some people breathe that back because that was like the last set of ooh-oohs. I have a prediction. There's two things I think happen why that's kind of an overlooked era. Is first, a lot of the bands, even the ones that were the most popular, were already doing like a second wave of a style. It was like, oh, 80s American hardcore's back, crossovers back. It was like the bands were bringing sounds back from the basements back up. And then, you know, as those scenes grew, like Negative Approach gets back together, fucking tons of thrash bands get back together and start playing bigger shows. That all bubbled up from our scene, from the basements to the big stages. But so maybe when people get into it, they don't go back to what was happening in 2004 because they'll go back to what influenced what was happening in 2004. Second is that YouTube wasn't there. YouTube came out in like 2004, 2005. And then good, like decent filming cell phones were another, you know, 10 years away. So it's today a lot of live music is way over documented. I think we were under documented and people like fucking, yeah, like Paul from Godstomper just uploaded a 2005 Fucked Up set from the Hazmat Warehouse in Oakland. So it's like the shit.
Oh, I
didn't
remember
go.
That fucking place. Wow.
Yeah. The Hazmat was awesome. But so that stuff didn't go right online to be archived. It's still being dug out and digitized from people's Super 8s and camcorders and shit.
Dude, I just found a VHS tape of a Roboto show in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, see, so just, like if that would have happened, whatever happened at Roboto last weekend, we can watch it right now. But what happened at Roboto in 2004 is on VHS tapes and Super 8 tapes and like, you know, A lot of that shit got thrown away when people moved out of their parents' house. Other of it, like I've got a milk crate full of VHSs with live shows on it that who knows if I'll ever get to digitizing it, you know? Who knows if I'll ever put it back in my VCR?
It was a weird period because it's that period of the death of medium and pre-digital. So people weren't videotaping shows like they had been before. Like there was no like commerce in it, I guess, for people to do it anymore. So it was just like,
yeah, there'd be like maybe one camcorder like that. What I just said, that Paul from Godstomper, he's not a tall man. And I would always see him at shows because he would put his camcorder on a tripod and just hold it up in the air from the back of the room. So you could see him because if I wasn't on the stage, I was usually up in front. But you knew he was there because you'd see this little 90s camcorder, you know, peeking up above everyone's head from the back of the warehouse or basement.
Mm-hmm. You knew he was there because you somehow were on a split with Godstomper, right? You left the room. You didn't know how that happened.
No, that's what Agathocles, right?
Yeah, Agathocles is Agathocles. One with every split.
Yes. They got to be
I thought Godstomper had some splits.
They have a lot.
They had some splits.
Godstomper's still playing DIY shows in Oakland now. Godstomper was funny for years because they would book shows and just not show up for a really long time, which is just kind of a weird move. And like everyone just gave them a pass. Like, it's Godstomper. What you going to do? Maybe they'll come next time. The other thing that's interesting, and this is a weird sonic weirdness, I think, for our early era, was that the first Godstomper LP was on Dead Alive Records, which ended up being like the Tear It Up and Victims and Annihilation Time label. Like Godstomper doesn't really fit sonically with what he ended up doing. And he's from the East Coast, but that he plucked like fucking Godstomper out of like Santa Clara, California in 2002 to be his first LP on a label that actually like did shit, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's like, I guess Godstomper were a slap a hand band, right?
Like that, I think they had a 7-inch in there. Yeah.
One of the singles on Slap a Ham and stuff. So I guess.
Sick Ham.
Yeah. They had that stamp of approval.
I think Godstomper was fucking awesome. What did they had? We said the fuck emos. Hold on, I got a sticker back here. Oh, emo attitude sucks is what my Godstomper sticker says with a guy with two fingers in his ears back over here on my record bin. Godstomper, by the way, the sickest band name. The sickest band name. Like, they back it up with sonically, but they wouldn't even have to. They're just like Godstomper. Yeah, it's a hard fucking name. Awesome.
It's a hard name.
Not a lot of nuance.
Bulldoze. That's a pretty hard name.
Bulldoze is a good one.
Oh, my God favorite Stomper name
sounds
is
punk though, where a bulldoze sounds heavy metal.
My favorite name is Cocaine Summer Splash.
I'm playing that fest in Orlando in August. Oh wait, no, it's in Austin.
That's
in Austin
real
in
band.
2006.
Real band name from Chattanooga, like in the early 2000s, had like the sickest fucking band names. There was what, Operation Cliff Clavin. What was the other one? There were Cocaine Summer Splash. 200 Leagues Under My Nutsack.
I liked Operation Cliff Clavin. That was like the first, like that was maybe the first and maybe only like folk punk band I ever liked.
Oh, Queer Wolf. Queer Wolf was another
Queer Wolf's
one.
A great
sick
name.
Yeah, they were a sick band too.
There were AIDS Wolf and Cancer Bats from, I guess at that point, Montreal.
Oh, yeah. Still, yeah. Cancer Bats are still at it, right?
I think AIDS Wolf might be still at it, too. Siri Pop, you know the people that did? They did Rock from the Crypt record and stuff.
Okay.
But they were, I think Cancer Bats got their name, if I'm not mistaken, from AIDS Wolf.
Do you guys think we lost the audience on this?
The show is all this. The show
we're just in the van yelling over each other. It's like we all normally with Scotty.
About bands this we saw.
This is what it's like with Scotty, guys. And just yelling over each other about bands.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Holy shit. That's amazing.
Scotty, though, your dad played in a garage rock band, right?
Yeah, my dad played in a band called HP and the Grassroots Movement, and they did two 7-inches with two 45s in the late 60s, And one, and this really speaks a lot to what live rock and roll was like in the late 60s, was put out by the Bloomfield Berkeley Teen Center, because a lot of their shows were at teen clubs around Detroit and around Michigan, where they would do like 3 1-hour sets of covers while like for a all ages crowd who would like dance and stuff all night long. So their first 7-inch was put out by the Berkeley Bloomfield, which are two suburbs right outside Detroit, Berkeley Bloomfield Teen Center. And their second EP was put out by Hideout Records, which is Bob Seger's label.
Oh, whoa.
And what's really cool is that when Bob Seger bought his masters back from Capitol, he reopened Hideout Records. So Hideout Records is an active label now that hosts all Bob Seger's catalog. And I have the 7-inch of my dad's band on that label from 67 or 68.
That's awesome. So would they have played, I guess, with Amboy Dukes and MC5, yes, and those types of bands?
Yeah, not MC5. They did play with Amboy Dukes. And then, so it was like the Grandy Ballroom in Detroit was like the spot right then. And then like, I found out later that my uncle, my dad's older brother, was like one of those, like the hippie with like the American flag top hat who used to like sit out in front of the Grandy Ballroom. And he was kind of just like a scene stir. Everybody knew. And he was just like bugged out of his mind on acid all the time. But yeah, they were playing that. But a lot of the bigger bands from the era, they didn't get to play with because they were so young. So they were really on their own, like the teen circuit, because the bars were just, it was a whole, the bars and clubs were just a whole separate thing.
Mm-hmm. What if they played with then, the dogs?
I wonder, the thing is my dad's memory is not that great about it either. So it's like, he remembers like 5 highlights. Okay. But you couldn't, like, if you had him on Turned Out a Punk, it would be very disappointing. Or if Nardwar showed up, it would just be like, oh man, he doesn't know anything about this. He's like telling you to ask me.
Yeah.
But the singer of my dad's band was Harry Perry, who is the guy, he got famous out on Venice Beach because he roller skates around in his turban and plays guitar. And he was like in Fletch, a lot of just like movie montages when they're like,
oh, Chevy Chase. Venice. Chevy Chase, yeah, dressed, yeah, up as him in Fletch.
Yeah. And so, yeah, like, and he's a on lot of like skates, openings, yeah, yeah, like a lot of like montages when they're doing like Venice Beach boardwalk, they'll show like Muscle Beach and like some stuff. And then they'll show Harry Perry like roller skating through and stuff. And I've met him a few times over the years. I always track him down when I'm down there. Tony, you met him one time, right?
I met him. Yeah.
You
I
just saw said hi to him.
I saw a clip of him today on Instagram. Actually, oh, wow. I don't know if it was an old clip, but just coincidentally. But yeah, I said hi to him, and I tried to. I go, yeah, I think my friend's dad was in a band with you, and I was like, can I get a photo? And he's like, yeah, man, like $5.
Like, it's like he's like, good story, bro. I'm working.
That's a friends and family discount, buddy.
He did. When I met him, I got him to get out of character when I met him, and it was really funny because when I walked up to him, he started playing a song for me and like really like, you know, he's a real psychedelic dude. So I don't know if his brain's a little fried from taking too much acid. You can definitely go there with that drug. But he was like looking me in the eye and like playing me this song. And then when he stopped, I was like, oh, hey, my dad's Craig Heath. He was, you know, he was your bass player. And he broke out of character. So it was really cool. He was like, oh, no shit. And then he's like, well, what do you do? And I was like, I actually own a record label. And this was pretty early on in Tank Crimes. But he goes, it was so funny. He goes, hey, who do you use for digital distribution? I was like, it was just a really funny thing for him to say to me out of character.
Does he have records out there?
I bought a CD from him. He never really ended up on a label. I had a dream at one time when I was working with that band, The Shrine was from Venice. And I really thought it would be sick if I could somehow get The Shrine and Harry Perry together on a track, you know, but it just never worked out. You know, Harry Perry's like really off the grid. I even saw some rumors a couple years ago that he died and like somebody like came out of the woodwork to like confirm it was a rumor, because he's really big in like Grateful Dead parking lots too. So that's like his other scene besides like tourist stuff.
Okay.
Wow.
That's got to be probably a brisker business too, of the Grateful Dead parking lot.
Oh yeah, I mean that's a whole Shakedown Street, baby.
Yeah, yeah. I want to go to a Grateful Dead show just for the parking lot, to be honest.
There's kids from my high school that would go just to buy as much drugs. It was like a wholesale market. Yeah, so like people would like save up money. They're like, oh dude, I got $340. I'm gonna buy every drug I can and bring it home and turn it into like $1,000 back in Brighton, Michigan.
I had a friend in high school that went to a Dead show, you know what, 94, and somebody dumped a vial of acid on his head, and I'd never seen him again. They said he was running around flipping over tables and shit, and he got arrested, and I never saw that dude again. Like,
what?
I don't, yeah, I mean, he got like institutionalized or something. But somebody came up behind him and dumped a vial of acid on his head.
Yeah, I mean, acid is
fucking, that's like worse than murdering somebody, man.
Yeah, it really is.
If you had a bad trip
for life.
Well, it's weird because it affects different people different ways. Some people took acid one or two times and it changed their whole brain to this day. And I'd probably taken acid like 100 times. And it changed me when I was taking it that frequently. But it just kind of wears, like, it wears off after it goes away. Acid, when I moved to San Francisco, you could buy 2 micro dots for $5 on H Street all day long. You could get liquid acid in a vial. You used to just, you could walk up to, like, some hippies and ask them for they called it a puddle. And you would just hold out your hand and they would squirt the liquid acid in the cup of your hand. And you would just fucking take it down right there. You'd just be like, puddle.
What?
No way.
Yeah, and then I don't know what happened. I've actually always been waiting for, like, if, like, a film or a documentary somehow covers this and I get to see it. But acid pretty much just disappeared in 2002. It just went away. It was fucking everywhere, and then it was nowhere. And I was doing it so much, I'm glad it went away. And I'm also glad it's not an addictive drug, because it just went away, and all of a sudden we couldn't buy it anymore. And then I just never did acid again. Like, I haven't done acid in over 20 years, but I've done it over 100 times. It just went away. And then by the time, like, acid started showing up again, I'm just kind of like, my attitude toward, like, I'll eat some mushrooms every now and then, but my attitude towards acid now is like, I did the shit out of that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
There are mushroom stores in Toronto now, like, lots of them.
Yeah, I did some legal mushroom gummies. It was awesome.
Yeah, you can buy mushroom gummy bear bars here, and like, it's wild because it's like kind of like when the weed boom happened here and all these illegal dispensaries popped off here. But the mushroom ones, like, I don't know, to me, mushrooms are not a party drug. Like, I could not imagine.
No, not at all. Not at all. We end up doing them on tour sometimes, and I always just like disappear because it is not a party drug. I like to be alone on tripping.
The last Heaven's Gate show I played, I was on mushrooms, and it was fucking awesome.
You did a show on it, and it was fun? Oh, wow.
The last time I played with Heaven's Gate, I didn't take a lot, but it fucking ruled. It was a really good experience.
Yeah, I did some legal gummies. I'll say that. And this is going to sound like a bad trip, but I did some legal gummies over the summer, and I really kind of wanted to, like, get out of my head, so I ate, like, 5 of them, so I kind of went overboard. Shit. But I fucking cried for 2.5 hours, and it was one of the best trips I've ever had. It was like, I just, like, it sounds like a bad trip, but if you have psychedelic experience, you can understand how that could, it was very therapeutic. It was really, really good. And it almost could be my last trip. Like, it was that therapeutic that I was like, wow, that really did something positive for me. Like, thank you, mushrooms. Keep it moving.
I'll take mushrooms, like, once in a while. At home, and then I used to take him on tour, and I think the last time I took him on tour, we were playing Halifax Pop Explosion, and Jonah's like in my, you know, Jonah's my roommate, so I take him and I'm like, I'll just go in the bathroom and watch a movie. And so I go in the bathroom, watch a movie, and I'm like, okay, I'll go to sleep now. And then I couldn't sleep because the smoke detector all night, I thought, kept going like and I'm like, that's the fucking worst thing. Like, it was like keeping me up all night. And then I wake up the next morning and Jonah's like, man, you were pretty fucked up last night. I'm like, God, I don't think I was that fucked up. He's like, dude, all night you kept going,
I thought you were going to say it was your tinnitus or something.
No,
So it was just wow. you making the noise that was keeping you up all night long.
Yes.
That is incredible. Yeah. That is a good story. That's a yes. good, and it's short and sweet too. Good, good psychedelic story.
No yeah. one was annoyed. No one was annoyed about that.
Jonah was a little bummed, but you know, he's farting like a trumpet. So what the fuck do I care?
Perfect tone. He's like C sharp.
Yeah.
Does Jonah party?
Yeah. Like- once in a while you can get him a party. He'd be like, you know what it is though? It's Virginia. Virginia's like the Austin of Richmond. I mean, in particular, is the Austin of sort of the Southeast.
I can see that for sure.
Party, it's party town.
Party town, and Jonah, we would go there, and Jonah would start speaking different. Like he'd kind of get a little bit of a drawl like a to his
southern,
voice.
Little southern.
Yeah, and then we'd say like,
I wonder if that's a Brandon influence on him a little bit. Or
it is, because Brandon had the full drawl, so you would get around yes. him and it would influence you to speak like that.
Yeah, and then we'd lose Jonah because he wouldn't stay with us. And then the next morning we'd always see him and he'd be wearing the Richmond uniform, we called it, where he'd have a leather jacket on with no shirt underneath.
Dude, there was one best friend's day where fucking Brandon rolled up. It was like 100 degrees outside. Brandon rolls up with black gloves on and no shirt on and a black leather jacket. And it says, and in Sharpie, it says, or I'm sorry, white out. It says Kid Rock real big on the back of his jacket. Fuck, man, that shit was so funny.
Dude, ironic back patches were a legit thing in the late, in the oohs. It's Chris Grande from Annihilation Time had a Sharpied Eddie Money fucking back patch. Which then they got Eddie Money's phone number and gave it to Longmont Potion Castle.
Yeah. Dude, we used to call Eddie Money. I mean, I think everyone on this podcast has called at least Eddie Money at least once, right? Like,
I've been in the room. I never dialed the numbers.
I have that was the thing for a while though, is like getting someone famous's phone number. And calling them and just being like trading people's number. I remember someone going like, do you want Flea's phone number? And I'm like, sure. And they're like, what do you got?
Yeah. It's like trading cards. Yeah, that's great.
Like, I don't know if I really want to trade into this thing. I think he's going to be probably changing his number real soon.
Well, Eddie Money was great because he would always answer. Like, and he'd be so,
yeah, no, he liked
it. Worked up.
He liked it. He was like a glutton for punishment. He liked having somebody to yell at and shit.
We're all going to be like that one day. We're just going to want.
He was like, he's like a drunk lady telling the cops she knows her rights or something, like after she does something stupid. Like, he was definitely had that kind of energy, like wanted to he had to convince you what you were doing was wrong and you needed to admit it, like prank phone calling. It's not.
What was it? But I think the story was, it was Grande or somebody with the Annihilation Time dudes, and was it his daughter that was at the
his
bar
daughter was at a party in Ventura or Ojai or something, and somebody stole her phone and got the number dad out of it, and they called it, and it was, and Eddie Money answered.
And then they
and then they kept it, and they used to call it from parties all the time from the Annihilation Time house. And then, yeah, they gave it to fucking Longmont Potion Castle. So it's like.
Wait, now that we're talking about this, so Tony, weird. I got to ask you, what's it like hanging out with John Travolta?
Oh, that's not what I thought you were going to ask me. Yeah, it was fun. We did it a couple times, and it was really cool. It was super nice. I got to watch the Super Bowl. Tampa Bay is my football team, and we got to watch the Super Bowl on his boat, like five of us partying. He didn't party that night, but it was a tremendous experience. He was a great host.
Yeah, it sounds like he's an awesome host from everybody.
I didn't join the church. I didn't join the church. Everyone asked me.
That's everybody's second question when they ask you about it, right,
yeah.
Tony?
Yeah,
like I don't know him that well. I just got drunk on his boat.
It's not like that. He's super inquisitive. He's fascinated about what we do, and He's a fucking great host, and we just had a lot of fun. Stayed up all night and ended up watching Ted. I stayed up all night. He doesn't sleep. He has weird hours, so we always, whenever I stayed there the two times, we stay up all night. And I was showing him like news bloopers. Fucking love news bloopers.
So you're telling me that hanging out with John Travolta is a lot like hanging out with Tony Yerba.
Yeah, watching not as much pro wrestling. Not as much pro wrestling there.
Did he pick Ted or did you?
I think it came on after the Super Bowl or something, and we all just like were like, cool. We're like on the fucking boat, right? Like we're in Tampa Bay, and Tampa Bay is playing in Tampa Bay. It was so sick. And he was in the fucking commercial at the Super Bowl.
Oh, he was in a commercial of that night, yeah. Too. One of the biggest.
Yeah, so I think we had some champagne and celebrated that. It was fucking awesome, man. That's my boy Jimmy who hooked all that up. Jimmy Marino. You got to get him on the podcast. He was like one of the last roadies for the Ramones and shit.
Man. Oh, yeah. Jimmy Marino would be a great fucking, turn out of punk. Oh, episode. Dude.
Yeah, you could, man. That would be a really good one.
Yeah, that'd be
and
awesome.
And my headphones are dying. Hold on. I'm out.
I love Grease, by the way. It was my mom's favorite movie. I grew up watching Grease like all the fucking time, dude. I fucking love that movie.
Are you excited
so
about Grease too?
I just fucking love Grease. I can sing every word to every fucking song. I love that movie so fucking much. It's so good.
You know, I would watch Primary Colors with him. That one where he played Bill Clinton.
Oh God! I got.
Well, do you remember when he played F. Lee Bailey in the fucking OJ one?
Oh yeah.
That's good. That he was great in that OJ one. Yeah. I thought he wasn't Robert Kardashian. Oh no, that was Schwimmer. Okay, yeah. No, that was great. He was great.
You should get
that's
fucking
like
Travolta on turned out a punk. Because he was telling me some crazy ass stories. Like, man, I don't know if I can tell.
I need to get the Grease soundtrack.
Come on. I'm sure as long as it's not sketchy.
No, it wasn't sketchy. I just don't want to be throwing shit around. But
was he like a punk?
Yeah,
dude?
Never mind. I'm like, no. But he like befriended Fred Durst and he had like some cool like Fred Durst stories.
It's not punk at all.
Oh, Brandon wore a Kid Rock jacket. That's punk, right?
John Travolta had a leather jacket in Greece. Yeah. Fred Durst. We saw Fred Durst in Belgium on Dave Witte's birthday, and Fred Durst was cool as shit to us. And I tried to do 10 push-ups on stage, on a festival stage, while Limp Bizkit was performing, and their stage manager picked me up by my feet and pulled me off, and I had to like backwards walk out like this. And he just goes, "Come on, man, you know better than that." And he didn't kick us out. He just made us go back to like stage right.
And I also got real sketchy with the mayor of.
Yeah, we partied with the mayor that night or whatever that town Alcatraz Fest is in.
He was having the best time. The mayor was just full on rage mode. It was awesome.
He sent us, remember?
Great night.
Remember when we did another festival that was like on the Belgium side of France, so it was kind of close to his town, and he sent us chocolates. Do you remember this? The mayor of that town, the mayor we partied with, then knew another show we were playing like the next year and sent chocolates like from the mayor. Yeah. Fucking awesome. I had, you know what else I had? I ate the best mustard with that dude. They had like the sickest mustard.
Fred Durst?
No, the mayor.
I thought it was cool that we partied with the president of Buffalo Wild Wings, but that is...
What? Wow.
Where was he?
He came to see us play in Detroit, or the guy who founded it, and then I think he had sold it for a lot of money at that point, but because he grew up close to the border, he's really into Canadian music, is what I heard. So,
oh, is he from Buffalo?
Cool. No, like Detroit, I think.
Oh, okay.
And they went to Buffalo.
Why do you call it Detroit Wild Wings?
They call it Coney Island Dogs.
I think originally they serve Coney Island Dogs too.
Yeah, Coney. I mean, Coney's is that's what they call a diner in Detroit, is a Coney or Coney Island. They're all, because it's all Greek owned and they sell chili dogs. Well, beanless chili dogs is the way to do a Detroit style.
Yeah, I love those. They're like a damn fine hot dog. I'm one fucked up.
I found a canned beanless vegan chili. So we watched that show Detroiters, and then I went and found that so I could make my wife a proper coney, while vegan, but a proper Detroit style coney.
Do you remember that place, the Big O, in Pittsburgh?
I think it was the O fries. It was just called the O.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I used to eat O fries out of the trash with Jimmy Rose. Also, Al from Hell Nation called me a churderer when I was just vegetarian and still ate cheese. Al from Hell Nation's like, "You're a fucking churderer."
Churderer.
Yeah, I was like, okay. I was like, this came from the trash, isn't that freegan? Like, sure. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh shit!
They had a famous hot dog there, though. That was like they had one of the best hot dogs in America, according to.
Well, Damien, you and I ate Okie dogs.
We did.
We ate Okie dogs together when we both ate meat. We fucking chowed those things. They're gross, but we had to.
I think I still have heartburn from that.
We just did it like for historical. It was so funny. Like, we didn't like them. We're like finishing eating them. I'm like, for history. For California punk, for the germs. I'm like, every bite I'm like saying why it's cool even though it's gross.
I don't know, I kind of liked them. Like, I think I was like, oh, it's like pastrami.
It just felt like drunk food. Like, everybody's put a hot dog in a tortilla when you didn't have any buns in the cupboard, and they like made it a thing, you know.
It's one of those things where you're like chewing it and you're like, it probably better off at this point swallowing a cup full of razor blades for the way my stomach's going to feel in an hour from now.
What was in it? What else was in it? Was it just a chili dog and a tortilla? Or what was the other weird thing in it?
Cheese, pastrami, chili, hot dog, and I think mustard. And they roll it up in the tortilla and grill it.
And Pasmir puts a cigarette out on it.
Yeah.
That's what we call the NFC cocktail. That's when you drop a cigarette butt in your 40 and keep drinking it. NFC cocktail.
I think the first time they went to Philadelphia, I heard someone tell me a story that they walked up and Changi was eating beans with a stick out of a can.
Oh, they're famous for that. Yeah, they were doing that. My very first time I meet NFC, they played a show at I think both you guys have been there, Warmwater Cove in SF.
Yeah.
Did I ever book either of you guys there?
We played there.
I wasn't there.
Okay, it was just a generator spot right out on the bay. Like, it's actually been gentrified, that neighborhood, but it was actually like just kind of no man's land down the bay in SF. And we used to throw shows down there. NFC was the only band that was ever loud out there, which was just crazy because they're just like a loud motorheady band. But the first time I met them, we pull up, they are eating beans out of a can with a stick. Just like Damien said, they're famous for that. They like, that was like their thing. Like, they love to pull out the can of beans when they got somewhere. But they also had a teenage runaway with them that they like brought over the border. Oh my God. It said, "See you in hell," spray painted on the back of their van with Quebec plates in America. It's fucking awesome. Bold,
is that the tour?
Bold punks.
Is that the tour where one of them did like a bunch of PCP and they just like kind of let him go near the border and he like ran across the border?
Yeah.
Or some, there's like an urban legend of that.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, they were only allowed into the States a few times. That was the only time they came to the West Coast, I think. And it was before the album came out. And they were doing, this will also date when it was, they had burnt CDRs of the 7-inch. But remember, if you burnt a shitty MP3, like the cymbals sounded digital when you'd play it back. So like my first NFC recording is a burnt CD of the 7-inch. Where it's me and Marky would call it JPEG'd cymbals, but it was that burnt CD cymbal where it was like a synthesizer or something, you know, but it sounded like it was broken into pixels somehow is how it sounded to me.
The first time it would have been the second time we played the Loud House, maybe the third time we played the show with them at the Loud House, and my 16-year-old cousin came and someone dosed him with PCP.
How did I beat Tony to the Debo joke? I don't know.
Damn, dude.
Yeah.
But that's like one of the nasty. I mean, that. Yeah, both the pouring the head and the acid thing that Tony started dosing someone with a hard drug is criminal, and I love drugs. Bullshit. But that's bullshit. Yeah, that's too bad. But
you're
yeah,
hooking somebody
so
up,
was he
you know?
Was he sweating in the chicken coop after the fucking
it was,
after he got done?
We're playing our set and he keeps running up on stage and taking swings at me. Like he's trying to fight me during our set, and I'm like, this is super fucking weird. And then afterwards I go up and talk to him and I'm like, oh, he's super fucked up. And then it was abundantly clear.
It's also crazy that we all kind of come from a place where that you can be in places like the Loud House and someone gets dosed with PCP and you have to be like, well, that's just what happens here. And like, yeah, we've accepted shit like that. That's so fucked up. And it's like that. I don't, we're like, at a, it's, this is some punk shit. It happens, you know, historically it has happened and it will continue to happen. And it's happening tonight while I'm in the room.
Yeah. I was out in LA a couple of years ago and I was talking to these kids at like a DIY show. And they were like, I'm like, what's the biggest problem facing DIY stuff here? And they're like, the NOS dude. I'm like, what's that? They're like, the nitrous guy, the guy that comes and tries to sell nitrous at shows. I'm like, oh, wow. It's like a big issue. They're like, yeah, it fucks up everything. But I guess
why? Nitrous, that's
because the nitrous dude rolls with a hard gang. And I guess the nitrous guy, well, they're like fights around the nitrous tank. I don't know if it's still a problem. This is, as I say, 2019, talking to these kids.
I feel like that was like in Philly, because I've definitely like saw that at Philly shows.
It was in LA when I was talking to these kids.
Yeah, okay. No, it gets bad because, I mean, there's a reason they call it hippie crack, dude. So if you have dangerous people around and in a party situation where everybody's fucked up and you're selling nitrous, that's like sketchy. And then in, you're in LA, you know it's sketchy, so you bring a couple big boys with you to help guard the tank, and they usually get put to use.
Yeah, yeah. I was just
and plus,
that.
People are just falling all over because you like black out on nitrous all the time. So people are like, I fell one time and rolled under a car. And then when I woke up, I stood up really quick and smacked my head underneath the car. It's fucking the worst.
Damien, when's the last time you did nitrous?
I've never done it. I feel.
Oh, it's fun. Not even like off a whipped cream can?
No, no. But then in another show on that same run, there was a kid selling whippets off the table. So I could have, I guess, tried the whippet there. Experience something close to
the tank is just so much crazier though, because there's so much, such an abundance of it, you know, like the whippets, there's only so much in each one and you can maybe sometimes put two into a balloon or something, but like walking away from the tank with like three or four full balloons, because they're usually priced so you buy more, you know, they're usually like 1 for $6, 2 for $10, you know, 5 for $20, shit like that. So they really want, because it is crack. So it's like, if I can get you to do two balloons, I can get you to spend all the money in your pocket.
Wow. So it's addictive, right? Apparently?
No, not physically. It's addictive while you're doing it. It's like, no matter who you are and what your experience with drugs are, all you want, if there's still more, you want to go back to that place where you just spent 15 seconds. It's so weird. It's so wasteful. It's such a weird drug, but yeah, it's
I don't
fun.
Think it's good for you either.
Oh, I no. don't think so.
No,
I don't think
no
so.
Way.
I think it does something to your brain. The whole drug is, it's like cutting off oxygen to your brain, and then you get to trip for 50 seconds because of it.
There are definitely like when you do DMT, it feels like, yeah, this is something my brain's supposed to experience. Like, it doesn't feel like you're fucking with shit, but I imagine, like, when you do acid sometimes, you're like, yeah, I don't know if my brain's meant to be experiencing this.
Oh, when you do good acid, I can feel it. I can feel it, like, as soon as it hits my mouth, I can feel it, like, visceral, like, going through all my blood veins into my nerve endings. I feel it, like, go from my mouth down all the way to the tips out of my fingers and the tips of my toes. That's how you know it's going to be a good night.
Like Steve
Rogers,
this shit
works.
With the superhero serum.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of like that.
A great ad for Tank Crime's acid. Well, we could talk forever, but you guys both have to get on with your lives. So tell us about the Brain Squeeze tour.
Well, it's free acid, okay? And then we're going to have nitrous tanks in Detroit.
Yeah, and Tony's headphones are dying because you're blurry now. You're getting blurry, Tony.
Oh, man.
One thing that's cool is that both you guys have played the Tank Crimes Brain Squeeze. Both fucked up, and Waste has played it twice. Fucked Up played it once. That was fucking awesome. And honestly, this Brain Squeeze tour, fucking Tony like surprised me with it. It was like a gift from Tony. So that's how we ended up doing a Brain Squeeze tour. Tony like called me and is like, Ghoul finally said yes. I've asked him. It's the last time I'm asking Ghoul to go out on tour with Waste. It's been 100 tries. They finally said yes.
We've talked about doing a brain squeeze tour, not even with Municipal Waste, but Scotty always says he wanted to do that and take it on the road. And it's a whole, you know, it's a big fucking production to do something like that. And things kind of fell into place with us and Ghoul. And then, you know, obviously we would want to get Necrot. And then Dead Heat was an easy choice too. So it's like, these are all Tank Crimes bands. Like, we can finally do this.
Yeah, and it just worked out like that. It was always too much for me to really handle. Like, now that we're actually doing it, I think we would have only pulled it off this way, where it just started off as a Waste headliner, and like three Tank Crimes bands could all commit to the same time. And that's how it just kind of worked.
We have a lot to thank Nick Storch for that too.
Yeah, Tony's booker, Nick Storch, like, really, I mean, he did all the heavy lifting, you know? Like, I keep giving Tony credit, but I think Tony just hit the go button with his guy. But and I like the idea of, I always just like, I mean, the reason that Brain Squeeze came together in the first place, and I always do this with all my shows in Oakland, is I just like to give everything, like, maybe not a theme, but even if you just name a show, it just kind of makes it more of an event. I always did it with the Tank Crimes Takeovers and the Tank Crimes Boogaloos and shit, or actually it was the Burger Boogaloo. I never did a Boogaloo, but I did something like that. I just stole someone else's branding. But I just always liked the idea of like making, we did the Splatter Thrash Bash one time. I just always liked the idea of like branding a show. It makes it more of an event and kind of makes it a big deal. So taking that to a whole tour, and then any label my size, of course, like a kind of a label showcase tour, it's so fucking cool because it's so hard to do at the level I'm at. Like, I'm at the level where there's demand for it, but not at the level where every band is playing guitar for a living and can just say yes to the dates, you know?
I mean,
so it really just worked out perfect.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I'm like, I'm super excited to. I've always wanted to tour. I love Necrot. Like, Sonny is, I met Sonny, I think he was still in Word Salad. I mean, one of the first time I ever drove cross country, I stayed at his house.
That house with the bomb, they had the bomb in the backyard.
Yeah. I think some of the Logical Nonsense people live there. I'm not sure. But anyway.
Steve-O was probably there.
Yeah, Jackass. No, I was going to say, I think that's where Steve, it came up on your podcast that Steve-O had partied there too.
Yeah, Steve-O, that was
okay, Steve-O's buddies. Yeah. And then, I mean, fuck, dude, Dead Heat's like the young thrashers, you know, it's great to have a fucking young thrash band on it. And obviously Ghoul is like one of our sister bands that we've came up with for a long ass time. So I don't know. I'm fucking really pumped to make it happen. Finally.
Yeah. I mean, you don't always get, you know, I know, you know, fans often think that every band is always friends and that's where they're on tour together. Most of the time we do become friends, but you often get put on a package with some strangers. And so it's fun to like, and then you have to become friends, you know? It's fun that like, we're all going to start, like Dead Heat even came out with Waste before. They don't know Ghoul and Necrot, but we already know those guys, you know, like the kids on the tour. But like, just like starting off day one and like 25 people all are already personal friends to spend a month together. I'm really just excited also for that, you know, it's fun. And I talk to everyone involved in this tour all the time, but it's not like we're in one big group chat together. I'm like talking to Tony, I'm talking to Ryan, and I'm talking to Sean from Ghoul. I do talk to Necrot always in the group chat, but still, like, it's like putting all my friends all together in one room, or, you know, and for the whole month, it's really exciting for a lot of reasons. And
don't make a group chat.
Oh, the Brain Squeeze tour group chat. That'll be fun.
Fuck,
everyone
that.
Will just put it on silence and it'll just die.
Well, I want to check the GO Train schedule to make it out to London, and I hope to see you guys there.
It would be awesome if you can make it out, Damien. We know it's didn't realize it was 3 hours, but it would be so cool. I don't expect anyone else from Fucked Up to come, but I'm gonna put a little weight on you to make the trip.
Have dabs, we'll travel.
Yeah, make Mike rent a car and drive you.